Welcome back to Silverlight TV. I'm John Papa, Silverlight Evangelist with Microsoft, and today I have Carl Shiflett.
Hey, John.
Thanks for coming on, Carl. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
This is going to be great. We've had a lot of discussions about navigation in the past in the show and in some blog posts I know you've done recently and some user groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I've convinced you to come on and show us all how it's done and some neat tips and tricks.
Okay.
Last time we had on David Pohl, who was one of the architects, one of the PMs on the navigation team when they first created all that. So he showed us kind of the basics through navigation. And now you're going to take us a little step further and show us how we can do some things that aren't out of the box with navigation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, David is the expert. He is the Microsoft expert on the navigation framework, and he's owned it for a long time, and I greatly respect him. In fact, he helped me out. I bounced a lot of ideas off him, and so this is a collaborative posting to make it easier for developers to program some scenarios that they, up until now, they may not have thought that they could do.
Okay, so what kind of things are we going to talk about today with navigation that go beyond the basic templates?
All right, well, basically, this nonlinear navigation, the idea behind it was really coined by Billy Hollis in his PDC 2 years ago, where he showed the world his WPF application that allowed him to go to any screen and then leave the screen in a state, in its current state, navigate away to another screen to accomplish another task, maybe even a third task, and then come back to that screen and see it in its current state, still running,
right.
Nothing's changed. And so when I was looking at the navigation framework, I wanted to do that. And I'm thinking, well, how will this work in here? So I went and tested it out, and what I was finding was that every time I clicked on a different button using the navigation framework default setup, was that my forms would be destroyed every time I left them, and so when I came back, it would
right.
be empty.
So it's unloading and loading screens as you're going,
exactly.
which introduces problems like, is my screen dirty? What state was it in?
Right, yeah. And even further, I want to write an app for a person to use who's not the developer.
Right.
And so they typically, if you have a line of business app, they're working on a screen. They have people that call them up on the phone. They need them to look something else up. The boss comes at their desk. They got an email. All kinds of, you know, they need to multitask.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I really pressed this. I really spent a lot of time studying this for myself so that when I took and wrote Silverlight out-of-browser applications, that they would have the same desktop experience using a Silverlight out-of-browser experience that you could in WPF. And that was the goal of this. So here we're at our home screen, and if we navigate over to our About screen, there's some text here that talks about the bullet points of what the nonlinear navigation framework does.
And since this is the first time on your screen, that just started at one, right?
Right. So what I did in order to simulate or emulate something working in the background is I have a timer running on the dispatcher, and it just increments down here. So now if I go away from that screen, in a typical application, typical standard navigation application, that screen would be destroyed. But if I come back to it, it's actually still running. That screen was never torn down. So let's talk about a real world scenario where if we, let's say that you have an associate working in the inventory module. And so let's say that they were here and their module, you could do two things. You could work on items and categories for items. And let's say that they wanted to search or edit this record here. So they could click on edit, and it'll take them over to the screen that'll let them maintain this. Now the phone rings, and they have to go back in because somebody wants them to go look up another record. So they click inventory to go back, right? That's one way. You can also use the back button. But then they can come over here and they say, oh, yeah, I want you to edit this record. Well, now they've really got two things open. They've got this record here, which they could close, and they could still go back to this one. Or let's say that we'll go back to this record here, and now the phone rings again. So we click over here, and now we can see we've got two records going, and it shows you two here, and it shows you that the item has two. Then what's nice about this is that, see, I could go back to my home screen or my About screen, and as a user of a business application, I can easily see that I have two forms that are currently opened up in my application. Oh, that's nice. And to surface this information, we could easily put a context menu here with a drop down. They can click. That's what I did in Barbecue Shack. There's all kinds of different things you could do.
And yeah, I think in Billy Hollis's app, he had some kind of an asterisk or something to demonstrate or to indicate that there were more than one of these screens open.
Exactly. We had other ideas around the space of, let's say that one of the screens who was off screen had a communication error or there was a database problem that you couldn't see because you were working on another form.
Right.
And what we would do is we would put that into an error state and we would change this to be red with a binding, so they go, oh yeah, I was working on something. And then they could navigate back to that screen and mm-hmm. say, oh, nice. So I got a little problem I got to take care of. Probably want to know about database problems right away, right?
Probably, if
the server's offline. And then also, here's another thing that this nonlinear navigation allows us to do. You're going to notice that in a navigation app, we're really running two separate instances of that form.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you can't do that normally in a navigation app without this kind of programming.
Right.
So you can come over here to go to add a record. And so we'll say that we're adding something for SILV, Silverlight TV. We want to do one of those. And again, we had to navigate away. So now you can see here that it's automatically picked up the state of what the record was doing. Of course, it's key. It's nice to have the key. Maybe you're, you know, some people are numbers people who work on items. And
sure, especially order entry type systems. Those keys are very important.
Really important.
Yeah.
And the power of the Silverlight being able to have great data template support. Oh, yeah, I'm adding Silverlight TV. Well, I could go back and edit that. You could also go and edit some of these categories. So now if you think about it, look at all the stuff we got opened here. And in an out-of-browser application, this is just critical.
Right.
That in an LOB application, not necessarily all Silverlight applications.
Right, right.
And so when you go back to your records, you can close them.
Now, what's really cool about this, people may not, if you can flip over to the item screen real
Absolutely.
Quick. Absolutely. So what we're showing here is over on the right-hand side, this list box, which I assume is a list box for an items control, we've got data binding showing us the three items that are in process, the three screens representations. In the upper right-hand corner, we've got the navigation template showing us with data binding again. And on the left-hand side, you've got data binding showing you we've got three items open as well. So the data binding from the same source is going in many directions.
Right, and so that's really all we're doing. All the little framework does is it has a collection of screens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting is that this takes regular forms, pages, that's in a Silverlight navigation app, we would use a page in lieu of a user control because it has more features built into the base class
mm-hmm.
that allow it to be notified when it's navigating to and from, if there's a problem, all kinds of different things that just a regular user control wouldn't have. What's nice is in order to keep track of each of these whole forms, is the navigation API actually just adds an attached property onto every page. So the users, you don't have to change the pages that you have in your application. You just use this framework and it will attach the
right.
attached property on the fly. And there's this collection of attached properties and the data that it can go through. And this is how it knows what each of these parts are. And it knows there's a three here and it knows that it has a three here. So it's just all I'm doing is just having a collection. I'm just surfacing data from a collection. So what we have here is it looks pretty much like a standard main page of a shell or of a navigation application.
Yeah, and even this is called Shell View. We're not doing Prism and
No.
This is just the main application page.
So what I like to do, and the reason I've named it this, is I like to name objects in my application that make sense for them.
Right.
So what I've done here is I have the main application, which it is just a shell. You can see that it doesn't have anything in it.
Right.
And so what I've done, and since it's acting as a shell, I decided to call it that. And then down here, this is where the inventory application is down here.
Your items and your categories and whatnot.
Exactly. And then there's a little small framework and some classes, and then I've got my web service down here. And
so
that's
this is broken out, not a lot, but enough different projects to show real-world scenario.
I tried.
Yes.
Right. So very looks just like what you get from the navigation template.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have here is this is where the frame is. So there's a navigation frame, and this is where all the navigation takes place. Now, you can have multiple frames, even on the same page. There's all kinds of things you can do. This app is very simple. I got one frame, you move in, you move out. I guess it would depend on the kind of application you have, also your target audience, pretty important.
Yes.
So we have a standard content of, we have a standard frame, and I even left the same original names there. Down here, all I've done is I have a nice link here to David Pohl's blog. He's got a nice article on his blog that tells you how to link to assets in other assemblies using the navigation framework. So I provided that link for folks who want to get some extra background. And it's very simple. Most people who are familiar with the URI mapper that comes in Silverlight, all we're going to do is just add here the component syntax.
And the reason that's, if I can interrupt you again, the reason that's really important is because if you do have a very modular application, you're not always going to be navigating to a view in the same module.
In the same folder.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, that's demoware.
Demoware. I'm allergic to demoware.
It'd be nice, but this doesn't work.
Right. So this is the one thing you do need to do is your mapper would need to be updated. And, of course, you could do this programmatically.
Sure.
Through reflection. You could load up stuff, say, oh, I got these 12 assemblies. I'll follow the pattern. Boom, I'm done. So there's a lot of easy ways. For small apps, this is just simple to type this, and you can see where you have to use our component syntax to get to our page. We've got a few different mappers here. Most people know you put the most specific at the top until you get all the way down to the bottom, which is your most generic mapper.
Right.
And to answer the question everybody wants to know is,
what did you change, Carl?
Right.
What did you change?
What did you do? Well, all I did was I took advantage of a new property that's exposed on the frame called the content loader property. Mm-hmm. And what you're allowed to do is you can put your own content loader and assign it to this property. Now, what's really fun, took a little while to get my head wrapped around, is you can actually nest these. And so what I did on my content loader here, I exposed a property, and if you wanted, you could actually link to or nest another content loader.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd say, well, what kind of scenario is that? Well, I'll give you one. And David Pohl has quite a few content loaders on his blog. So you could have a content loader that does the nonlinear navigation. And in effect, my content loader, all it's doing is it receives the request and it says, do I have one of these already in my cache?
Right.
Oh, I have one. The request now stops, we're done, and I surface the form that was previously there.
Right.
Well, let's say that you don't have one in the cache. Well, then what I do is I just offload that to the default content loader, the mm-hmm. one that you would normally use if you didn't have this property set, the one that Microsoft.
So you're really just stopping the process of navigation, intercepting it through an event, basically, mm-hmm. in your class, saying, is this specific instance of this view, whatever view it might be, for this particular item, or in existence?
Exactly.
If it isn't, just continue on your merry way the way you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, please use this one over here.
That's right.
You can't have a collection of these things. You have to nest them because there has to be a defined sequence of events.
Exactly.
Right.
And there's an exact route and an exact chain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy. I just love XAML where you're just declaring what you want mm-hmm. to happen and it just happens.
And for anybody who doesn't like lots of XAML, we're only doing this because we're showing nesting. If you didn't have nesting, you could have just had one line of XAML inside your content loader as well.
Without a doubt. And you could do this in code too.
Yeah.
This XAML is just very clean
and
simple. There's hardly any code behind for this form.
So here's our shell view code behind?
Right. So this is the code behind for for our shell. And here I have this little separator. That doesn't really mean anything here. And our properties. So what the way that I've architected this system is that as forms are being brought into view, mm-hmm. my content loader attaches an attach property onto the form. So this is how I'm able to know what forms are active, what module they belong to,
mm-hmm.
All the information that we need. And I do it by attaching a navigate key. That's the type that I have. That has all the information we need. So as you remember before, when we saw the list over here and we added the new item and I typed Silverlight TV,
right.
And then when we closed the form, it came back up and we saw Silverlight TV displayed. What I was really reading, I was iterating through these attached properties, and that's where I was getting the information from. And all this property does, it's a shortcut way to get to the current navigation key
mm-hmm.
that's on this page. So whatever, in case this code down here needed to see that, that's all this is doing. So you can see I'm getting these attached properties here. Very, very simple stuff. You can see here, I mean, we're hardly doing anything. And here, what we've got here, This code here is slightly changed from what's provided by the template. As we know, as you click on the different buttons, they would turn blue while that one was active.
Right.
And so what I needed to be able to do was do things slightly different, because now I've got an application that could have a whole bunch of different forms, right?
Sure.
And so that form really wouldn't match up with that button. And so what I did is I just created this little routine here that goes and sets these the visual states on the buttons to keep them sorted out. And this is what this is how I update my my content for that button. So the inventory button's content gets updated. And all I'm really doing here is, and you can see how this works, is I'm going to go make a label with account for application suite. So there's my that's my application suite. Mm-hmm. And Carl likes really long names to make the code self-documenting. And it drives some people crazy. And that's really all it is. You've got a failed event, and this is part of the standard.
But all this code that's in the shell views code behind is very generic, meaning it has nothing to do with, there's nothing
with
in here saying
zero,
it's
done.
Inventory or category or item.
Absolutely.
Or nothing.
Could totally use this code
right
out of the box. There's one line of code that you would, so for every module you had, you'd have one of these. That's the only change that would have to be made. That could easily be offloaded.
Yeah, yeah.
And to talk about reuse, if we look at, so let's go take a look at a simple page here. And let's come down here. Let's go down to the inventory module real quick, and we'll look at a simple form, which is down in our views. So here's our category maintenance view. And one of the things you'll see that I started doing, I'm one of the fans of the MVVM world, mm-hmm. have been for 18 months now, is I started putting my view models underneath here. So I have a little macro that I run, and it goes and it puts them under here, because most of the apps I've seen, there's pretty much a one-to-one correspondence.
But
not in all apps. In a simple app, it's typically there's the main form has a main view model. Mm-hmm. You could have other nested children view models. So, but this just allows us to keep the code all, I don't know, I just started doing it.
Yeah,
I kind of like it. So the category, if we look here, this is the, let me open this up here. So this is a category maintenance page, and it derives, instead of drawing from page, I derive from page base. You'll see one in a second. But all I've got here, and I actually don't even need this code here, but I did it here to simplify simplify this demo. Otherwise, it wouldn't have any code at all.
Right.
Right? And so what this is that close button that everyone saw. And so the reason that this code is here is because to navigate, you actually have to be talking to the UI. Mm-hmm. And so in the when you work with the navigation framework, it's a little bit different, because typically you and I were doing view model. We hardly look at the view code unless we're doing something very, very view specific.
Right.
And so the navigation framework, it forces us, if you will, if I could use that word, to interact with the navigation service. And I didn't want my view model to know anything about a navigation service. And so what I would typically do is just use the Prism event aggregator and say, hey, navigate me.
Publish an event.
Publish an event.
Yep.
Be done with it. I could have wired something back from the view model to the view. I don't really like
that. Yeah, and specifically, I mean, this code, yes, it could be inside the view model, and you might use a command to actually execute it.
I would absolutely do that.
But you're right. You generally wouldn't want the navigation service to be called inside of a view model.
No.
And that's where you'd use an aggregator or an event or a messenger class or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
There's 100 patterns we could introduce if we wanted to.
If we wanted to, we could go crazy. And you could see, so you might wonder, well, how do you actually take something out mm-hmm. of the navigation, nonlinear navigation framework? And the way it happens is you can see that I have the navigate key actually exposes the collection for that,
right,
for the particular frame. So you have to have the collection by frame, right? And you can't be another assembly can't be talking to a frame in another assembly. That's just, you just can't do that.
Right.
And so the way I got around this was by exposing the collection of everything we do. I just put a reference in every navigate key. Mm-hmm. Now it's easy to get to. So here's pages, remove, take this one out. That's easy. Another thing you have to get used to, which is unfortunate, you know, there's pluses and minuses to everything we do, right?
Sure.
So when you work with a navigation framework, a lot of times you're working with URLs, those are strings. get over it, right? It's just, it's how it works. And it's very powerful because you have the deep linking.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really great feature.
Yes.
Even in an LOB, you say, yeah, well, you know.
Let's say you're trying to show somebody specific. You send an email to your boss. Go check out this particular page and this particular application.
Right.
Boom, pops it right up.
Exactly.
Web apps, you expect that. With line of business apps, you're not always getting that, but with this, you can.
You could easily get that. So that's all this is doing here. It's very, very simple code. And in the page base, you could see it's hardly anything here. So there's the here's the navigate key. So
mm-hmm.
now the page, I just expose a property, so real easy to get to it. And then you typically have these events that run in the pages. So you've got on navigating from, navigating to.
Right.
Which, and if you think about it, if you're an MVVM programmer, one of the things you miss, unless you have a framework that does it for you, is you miss your loaded event in your view model. You say, you know, how do I know when this thing comes into view?
Right.
Well, what's nice is that you can cast, and the way I've set this up is I go ahead and I cast my data contacts as a, and I'm just using view model based. Most people would use an interface,
sure.
But here we go. And what we can do is I can now call a method inside my view model and say, hey, I'm navigating away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And look at this. I can set a cancel. The view
so
model.
So now you can tell your view model can then voice its opinion about the move.
And say, hey, did you know we're dirty? Did you want to do something about that before you navigate away? So I think this is very clean. It's a very simple API. And then when you navigate to a page, again, we're kind of doing the same thing. We're going to go ahead and get our data context. And now let's take advantage of that. We've got the data context. Let's tell the view model what your navigate key is.
Right.
So now the view model doesn't have to go off and do some weird, strange stuff. I can actually just give it some information. And then down here, when we're talking about sometime in a navigation application, you have API, UI API things, and
mm-hmm.
they're going to kind of creep into the view model. Well, one of the things you have to handle is query strings. So if you're a WPF guy, you like query string, there's this thing at the top, and it's got some information like the record that the user would like to see. And so you've got to be able to pass that information. So what this short bit of code does, it's parsing the query string, and it's going to take the results of this and pass to the view model. There's an abstract class, and this method here gets overridden in all my view models. I'm telling the view model, hey, please load that record. And if that's a zero, it knows what to do. Oh, that's new. Okay, great. So you can see it's really simple code, and it's not like this is completely reusable. Obviously, it's in a base class. I never have mm-hmm. to write this again. And that's how I'm able to take something where I have a navigation framework that's UI, it's very UI-driven as to how you navigate.
And to create a brand new view in this particular structure, let's say it's in the same module for now, just to keep things simple. You'd create a new view, you'd create a new view model,
mm-hmm.
and you would just add that view's key. I guess the query string for into your shells, if you wanted it to be in the navigation, the visual navigation, you put it inside the shells view, or where would you actually add that view's link?
So you want to talk about how to surface a link to something, right?
Yeah, so we add a brand new view.
Question.
How do I get to it?
Okay, really nice. So let me show you. Oops. So if we come over here, let's take a look at one of our forms, and the one I'd like to show you is the view. I'm down one project too many. Right here. I want to take you to the inventory view.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to love this. This is just rocks. And this is one of the benefits, a huge benefit, that in my view models, you'll hardly ever see any commands with the navigation framework. Why? Because they can navigate from the UI, so they never have to talk to the view model. But the view model gets notified that you're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
It gets notified when things are coming into view. But it's not like I have to wire up a command and go over here, and then the command does go over and do this. So to really drill into your question, so here's that hyperlink button. And then we're talking about where it's adding. And so what happens is this button here, the navigate URI, what this is doing is it's data binding to either when you want to create a new as a new item or a new category. So all it's doing is this binding here, add button URI string.
Right.
It just returns back a little string that says, I want you to go to the category maintenance view or the inventory maintenance view, and it adds a query string parameter of add. And so there's no controls, no nothing here. So this is the list box on the right. And you can see I've got your
What's nice about this, too, is in the URI, you've got, you're not hard-coding in strings for paths to views.
No.
You're using binding. Again, I'm trying to reinforce the binding aspects here is key throughout the application.
Right here, Navigate URI. I'm doing a binding. And so here, so if you think about it, I've really got four different kind of records that can be over here.
Right.
I can have item. I can have item adding, item editing, because they're going to be different. How you go back to them, and the same thing with category and the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this converter does, it just takes the navigate key that's being passed in, and it processes that, and it comes back to a navigate URI.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't need a command, I don't need anything. So that's kind of nice where you can just, and in Silverlight, you have this really nice powerful feature where just based on your data context, I'm gonna just gonna return back the template that I want. And I put them in line here because they're easier to develop, and it's easy to, for people to like figure out. And
mm-hmm.
And again, if you look at these, I just love this. Here's the hyperlink button. If you want to edit something, so check this one out. So here we have an item ID. That's my path. And here's my, I'm just going to go ahead and piggyback on the string format's capabilities. And so we can see here, I know I did that again.
You dragged it over, yep.
Yeah, this is, I'm always doing that. I mean to break my finger off or something. So here we can see that we're just using the inventory right here, and there's our view. And so in this case, we know that we're going to that.
Right.
And so it was really easy to do it this way. And then down here, you've
got... And
you
could still bind what you needed to if you had.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we are binding. We're sending the ID that you want here. We're sending this ID, and we're sending it off here. So this is one of those things that we have to get used to is we start to see something like this, a URI. So do we want deep linking? Yes. Okay, well, then we have to deal with string. And I think it comes down to as well, what's the developer need? What's the requirements of the application?
Well, the keys here are it's still scalable. It's very scalable. It works for a modular application.
Absolutely.
And there's very little code you have to do to implement this.
Right. And in fact, most people probably, unless they wanted to, they would have a different screen for each of their applications.
Right.
Now, I like to reuse the one because now the interface is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of value with a certain set of users.
Certain things like lookup lists and tables and maintenance, things like that are generally just forms over data, and you can reuse a similar template.
Because we have data templates.
We do.
Data templates are really cool, right? I mean,
well, hey, Carl, I've got to tell you, I'm really jazzed up about this, and you must be, I think you're going to win the happiest guest we've had on Silverlight TV so far.
Well, I love technology and I love the Microsoft platform, so I'm sorry, you know, like what can I say?
So we'll surface links to your sample code to your blog post.
Oh, thanks.
That you're going to accompany on this.
Yeah.
Your Twitter ID and your social security number and your credit card, right?
And don't forget birth date so you can steal my identity.
Great. And you saw it here on Silverlight TV. No, thank you very much for coming
on. Cheers,
John.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for watching.